This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, coming to you from the studios of Tantalk Radio Network here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, I'm going to have a great day today. I have two guests in the studio, both with Italian names, and it is always so much fun to have writers in the studio. It's a very interesting combination. I have Jackie Minetti here, and she's going to be talking about a wonderful book that she's written called One Small Spark. She's been on before to talk about her other book, Jacqueline, which, hi, Jackie. I understand you won a prize for Jacqueline.
Yes, just recently the Military Writers Society of America awarded it the gold medal for children's fiction.
I told you you would, because it is a wonderful book. It's a delightful book. And I have here an author who is... It's really funny. Andrew Bustamante is, I love Italian names. Anyway, it's fantastic. He has written a very little book, but it's a very interesting book, and he's going to tell us about himself. Hi, Andy.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, you have a great voice. Okay, now, what's your book? Tell us about your book. It is called Everyday Espionage, Winning the Workplace.
Correct, yes. So I'm a former covert CIA intelligence officer, which makes it very difficult to publish anything in the public sector, because everything I write has to go through a publication review committee chaired by senior officials at CIA. So it's in addition to whatever writing process I have, it's another 6 to 9 month clearance process where they redact what I can and can't share. So to work through that process, what I decided to do is actually create something I call a micro book or a file. Everything at CIA is broken into files, case files, asset files, agent files.
Exactly. Lots of files.
But in most files, cap out at about 5,000 words, because when an officer reads through a file, they're supposed to retain the vast majority of what they read. So my thought was, if I create 5,000 word files, call them books, call them micro books, release them in an e-platform, essentially what I'm doing is maximizing the amount of retention my audience can retain, while also minimizing the amount of words I have to get through this publication review committee.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that, because it's fascinating. I don't know, we just talk about your life, but then we'd have to have some CIA personnel in here to redact us. Boy, we would have fun, huh?
I don't know if fun's the word I would use.
Well, no, I don't know. I always found it rather amusing. Now, Jackie. And by the way, I told Andy, and he didn't get the hint. Today is Benjamin Franklin's birthday. Now, as a person who has obviously been in disguise, although how he could disguise himself because he is so handsome, I think anybody looks at him one time and they'll never forget his face. But I was hoping that he would come dressed as Benjamin Franklin. Wouldn't that have been nice, Jack?
Perfect. You don't want to see me in tights. That is something that everybody wants to forget.
Okay, well, yeah, we definitely don't want that. But the Benjamin Franklin would have been appropriate for you, Jackie, because tell us about One Small Spark.
Well, One Small Spark is a middle grade historical novel, and it takes place immediately prior to the Revolutionary War. The way it came about, it was just kind of interesting. I was reading a book called Legends and Lies, The Patriots, and I realized there was a character in there that I had never heard of before, and he was an 11-year-old boy, the son of German immigrants. His name was Christopher Sider, and he's been kind of lost to history, which is unfortunate because he had a very pivotal role. At the time that he was living in Boston, the Sons of Liberty were a group that was trying to mobilize the population to take up arms against Britain. And most of the colonists were unhappy with their current situation. They didn't like that they were being taxed, and they didn't like that they had to quarter soldiers in their homes, and they felt that they were not being treated as British citizens should be treated. But the idea of of actually taking up arms and going to war against the mother country was something they couldn't, there was a bridge too far for them. They just couldn't bring themselves to do that. And in comes Christopher Sider, this young boy, who became part of the Sons of Liberty actually went out and they talked to these young boys. Some of them were journeymen, some of them were apprentices, and some of them were just, you know, school kids. And they got them all fired up and had them go out and demonstrate. They would hang in effigy the merchants who were who weren't participating in the boycott. They would vandalize businesses, this sort of thing. And this little Christopher Sider happened to get caught up into one of these, they call them demonstrations. And he was shot and killed by a man of ill repute. His name was Ebenezer Richardson. He was actually an informer for the British. And he was kind of a shady character personally as well. So people didn't like him to begin with. And he killed this 11-year-old boy. And that's why I call it one small spark. That was really the catalyst that sparked the Boston Massacre, which occurred shortly after his death. The Sons of Liberty used his death as an excuse to really, there were 5,000 people at his funeral, and they had hundreds of schoolboys marching in procession behind his coffin, and they had speakers that were talking about, you know, what an affront this was, that innocent blood was spilled by the British. That's what they considered this man, even though he was a colonist. And people became so infuriated that they finally were willing to take that step. So I wondered. I thought, gee, well, if it weren't for this young boy, maybe the revolution might not have even taken place, you know. But yet, he was lost to history. I started to research. I Googled his name. There were no books written about him. He was mentioned in books, but there wasn't a book that told his story. And I thought, gee, it's sad that this child was forgotten when he played such an important role in our history. So that was what motivated me to come up with the story. I had to solve some thorny issues. In particular, killing off Christopher Sider is not something you do in middle grade fiction. You can't. I learned that with Jacqueline, because I killed off a character that the publisher told me that was a no-no, because she was a mom, and I had her going to Auschwitz and not coming back, and they felt that was too dark for the lower age level of middle grade, and they were absolutely correct. So I knew that I had to distance Christopher a little bit, so I decided to tell the story from a point of view of a young boy who is, he's a son of a merchant, so he's fairly well off and comfortable. He's been very protected all through his life. His father is not really a loyalist, but he's not really ready to take up arms either, so he hasn't really decided yet. And this child is kind of pulled into this cauldron of events that's going on. And he meets Christopher, and that's how I told this story, through this other boy.
Well, I think it's a fascinating story, beautifully told.
Thank you. You're
an excellent writer, and definitely worth winning an awards with your writing. But it is so important, I think, that we teach our children more about American history,
oh, yes,
that they understand what's going on, because we don't always know what's going on. Isn't that true, Andy? Would you say we sometimes don't know what in the heck is going on out there?
You know, it's funny, as I was hearing Jackie kind of lay out the storyline, the phrase that really caught me was the heroes lost that history doesn't know about. Because, you know, when I was serving with CIA, the piece to me that was kind of a badge of honor for all of us is that we were the unspoken heroes, mm-hmm, right? The silent sentinels protecting Americans every day. And our biggest victories never make it into headlines, and our biggest failures do. And even now, as I'm on the outside looking in, it's really important to me that my message is that those people still serving right? We're going to work every day. We're going to the grocery store every day. We go and watch Netflix at night. Somewhere, somebody is on the leading edge of keeping us safe, and we will never know their name. History will never know who they are. And I think that that is such a noble sacrifice, right? And it takes people like you, historians like you, Jackie, that value that and then bring it to the forefront to inspire another generation of people who are willing to be those silent heroes that keep all of us safe and keep our posterity safe.
That's so true.
Absolutely. So what inspired you? What inspired you to get into the CIA?
Well, I guess everybody's inspired at some point to tell a lie. Sometimes it's a practical need.
yes.
And over time, you know, I think that I don't like being gender biased, but I certainly grew up in a gender biased era where boys all wanted to be firemen or police officers or secret agents or whatever else it might be. And then you kind of grow into adolescence. And adolescence is such an important time because so much of what we become as adults is shaped in our adolescence. And I was fortunate enough to have a mother who was hard-headed and outspoken and courageous, especially as a woman in that era, where she was, you know, telling me I could do anything. I could be anything I wanted to be. And that kind of took me to pursue scholarships that I otherwise would have never pursued. And I found myself getting a full ride scholarship to the Air Force Academy. And then graduating from the Air Force Academy just kept opening opportunities. So graduating from the Air Force Academy got me a very high clearance. It got me a second language, a strategic language in Chinese. And I kind of moved on from there to work with nuclear missiles. And the story just kind of continues until I decide that I'm going to take my mom up on her advice, be anything I want to be, and all I've ever really wanted to be was a hippie. That's all I've ever really wanted to be.
Well, that's a leap. That's
I don't want to shave. I want to help, you know, children. I want to go to amazing places that don't have luxury hotels. Like, this is what I want to do. So I applied to the Peace Corps, and my application somehow got rerouted. And when I got that phone call from the government asking me if I'd be willing to apply my services in a different direction, I said yes.
Okay. Well, it's funny. Yes, we hippies, as I was, sometimes land up in very interesting places. That's all I will say. But it is wonderful that your mother was one who really encouraged you to follow your dreams. And were there books that influenced you as a child?
Oh, absolutely. I'm honestly, the books that probably have influenced me the most are the books that I read as a young professional that were written more classically. So a book that I often reference when folks ask me about my reading history is Ender's Game. Now, the book Ender's Game blew my mind, and I was like 23 years old when I read it. I was a college graduate. I was a high school graduate. I was a military officer at the time. And here's the story of a young boy who's embracing the struggles of leadership. And the whole infrastructure around him is manipulating him outside of his understanding to capitalize, to maximize his capacity for success. That concept that we have to be malleable beyond what we're willing to accept, that secrets might actually help unlock what our potential is. And in the end, nobody wants to spoil the end of Ender's Game, so I won't. Read the book if you haven't. But essentially, we come to this conclusion at the end where we have to ask who was right. And that's an internal answer. It's not something the book answers for you. And that was, in many ways, kind of what I found myself living through when I went to the agency. And I reflect back on that book, and I reflect back on my experience, and I continue to ask myself the question, who's right? Is there a right? Is there a moral high ground? Is there an ethical dilemma in everything we do?
And so that comes across in your books, which let's explain a little bit how they are laid out. You have a pattern that you followed throughout the book. Explain that.
Yeah, so the first book that's been published is called Everyday Espionage, Winning the Workplace. And the overarching umbrella for everything is everyday espionage. And it's this concept that we can take espionage techniques, espionage tactics, and espionage concepts and apply them in everyday life to achieve very tangible, very specific advantages. It's how we do it in the international espionage world. And what I have discovered is that after being an intel officer and leveraging these concepts to success operationally and in my own career, when I left the agency, I found myself having to lean on the same skills to succeed outside of the agency as well. So as an example, in the book itself, Winning the Workplace, I talk about how you can use these four specific concepts. I call them the four C's in the workplace to generate enough influence to be able to direct your own career. And I'm not talking about direct influence. I'm talking about indirect influence, where you're creating the kind of influence where you're driving the hand of the decision makers above you without them realizing that you're in control of the situation.
It's a very smart book, because if you read it, it really tunes you into looking around you, reanalyzing things and saying, now I start to understand why some people are successful, why some people make it, because they're playing this game.
They're in tune.
They're in tune.
And then there's those people who are consistently frustrated because they think that the game is going to change for them. Or they think that they don't want to play by the rules of the existing game. And what we all have to understand is that the only way a game is ever going to evolve is if new champions play the game the original way and introduce new rules. So it's frustrating to me to watch people struggle because they have good ideas and they want to do the right thing for the right reasons, but they're not willing to master the existing art before they introduce their new art. And I like the word art because there was this fantastic analogy that was given to me, and it was about Dali, we have this phenomenal museum in St. Petersburg, the Dali Museum. Dali became a master of a new form of artwork because he became a master of every previous form of artwork first. If Dali would have just come out painting what he paints, we don't know if he would have succeeded or not, but he would have absolutely been frustrated and he would have absolutely struggled. But because he mastered the traditional classic forms before him, he became bored with many of those forms before him, and he applied those into his new form. Now he could create a whole new different work of art. We can do the same thing.
Oh, that is a wonderful thing about the Dali Museum. People are, it's so unexpected. I love to bring people there because they've seen Dali. They think they've seen Dali. And then when they see from the beginning and the transition over the period of time, I love to see their faces. You're walking through and you say, oh my goodness, I didn't know he could do this.
Yes,
and do it so brilliantly.
And they show you his impressionism and they show you his still form, and you are shocked because you can't believe it's the same hand, it's the same mind, it's the same man mastering so much before him to prove that he can create something new.
Exactly. And that's a wonderful example. And for everybody who comes to this area, you really have to go and visit the Dali Museum, because it is eye-opening and it makes you have this thought process. Wow, there are things that we don't know. There are hidden things. We might see something, but there's so much hidden behind there. And I just love it. And so I think that's a great example. Now, you know, Jackie, I think it's very, you know, from my perspective, because I homeschooled my boys, and I was so always interested in making sure that they understood history and that they read history. But in combination with just reading. I mean, they read the Hardy Boys. They read every series, because in those series they were traveling, and this is mm-hmm. part of the fun of education, of what you learn from reading books. And so I think it's wonderful that you've concentrated on this middle grade period.
Well, it seems that I recall back when I first started teaching, and I would look at the Newbery Award winners, and most of them were historical fiction. Lately, that hasn't been the case. And I saw things evolve in education during the course of my teaching career that I found kind of disturbing. Patsy, when you and I went to school, you recall we used to have geography taught as a separate subject. We had American history taught as a separate subject. And Western civilization, Western European history, and civics, all of them were taught separately so that you were immersed in those for at least a year. And you had some really good foundational knowledge of history. During the 60s, all of those things were kind of lumped together under the social studies umbrella. And when that happened, it seems that history kind of got pushed to the background. And geography, I mean, people really anymore have a very tenuous grasp on geography compared to when what I saw when I was young. And it just, you know, the saying, if you don't learn history, you're doomed to repeat it. I really believe that. And I'm very concerned with the lack of understanding, especially of American history, that students have today. And that was one of the reasons why I wrote both books, Jacqueline for, you know, learning about World War II, which was a little easier for me because I was closer to that period. And One Small Spark was more of a stretch because it involved a whole lot of research. And I wanted to make sure both books were historically accurate, right to the letter, to the point where in One Small Spark, I was looking up word origins to make certain that word, if I was using it in dialogue, that word was in use during that time period. And I was surprised at how many were not, so I had to switch words around. But I wanted kids to get a really good glimpse of what life was like then so that they could see that, you know, he had to go to the privy outside and it was cold in the morning and wash his face with the water in the rain barrel. And, you know, he didn't have the running water and the electric lights. And I really don't think kids have a grasp of that because the technology has just become so advanced and so pervasive that they think things were always that way. It was funny, recently I saw a clip online where they showed a bunch of college students a rotary phone and they didn't know what to do with it.
I know, they don't know what to do with it. Okay, well, yes, it's wonderful what you're doing, and it's so much fun for us to think about geography because we love geography. And I have a feeling Andy has traveled to a lot of places, as I have. And so we're going to talk about that in a little while. I'm going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Andy about, well, not where he traveled, but some of his ideas on travel. Okay?
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660. Or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
am back in the studio with two wonderful guests, Jackie Manetti, who has a new book called One Little Spark.
One Small Spark.
Sorry about that, Jackie. And Andrew Bustamante. And his book is called, what's it called?
Everyday Espionage.
Everyday Espionage.
Winning the Workplace. Yes,
and,
ma'am.
Yes. And it's this one, the first in a series.
Correct, ma'am.
You're planning to have a series. Do either one of you speak Italian with these Italian names?
No. And it's funny because my name may be Italian, but there is no Italian in my bloodline.
No Italian. Okay. Oh, wow. That's funny. But beautiful names.
I agree.
Isn't it really lovely? Now, okay. Well, we can't ask Andy a lot of questions. No, we can. We can ask him a lot of questions. Let's get him.
I can just say no.
That's right. You can. Okay. Well, you never know around here. We have some rooms back. Andy, wow. Does it drive you crazy listening to the news right now?
There's a lot of things that drive me crazy. So I actually, the people closest to me, my wife, my in-laws, my parents, they all know that I stay far away from the news because there's a number of reasons. In addition, not only are most American news sources heavily slanted one way or the other, which makes it very difficult to be able to ascertain what is factual and what is salesmanship, then there's also this almost American addiction to bad news. So all the news that you get is slanted and it's all bad. And it's very hard, I think, to get up and be excited and be optimistic about the future when that's kind of the information that's coming at you from all different areas. That's sort of how we all feel.
And we wouldn't want you pulling out your beautiful curly hair. So, you know, good. Stay away from the news because it is very frustrating. And you're right. We don't hear a lot of the truth in a lot of the news. And sometimes perhaps we don't want to know everything that's going on. But I just haven't had an ad about Toastmasters, and I want to thank Glenn Erickson, who supports Joy on Paper with these wonderful ads and promoting reading, which he does. He just always wants to help people, go to libraries, find resources to write their own books, and then he's a Toastmaster, and you're a Toastmaster.
Correct. Yeah, actually, in many ways, I got my start on a public speaking stage through Toastmasters. I was able to understand a lot about how to communicate and appropriate communication techniques through the agency, but actually finding my way to a stage and finding my way to how to synthesize large amounts of information in a very short period of time, that's in many ways that's a Toastmaster skill.
It is, and it's wonderful that I think you're the first Toastmaster I've had on the program, and I think it's great, and I know Glenn Erickson will be so happy about that because he believes in the philosophy of Toastmasters, of getting out there and sharing knowledge and getting people excited about ideas and sharing ideas. And when you are as you said, you plan how many books in this series?
I'm hoping to publish eight books that are under the everyday espionage category that apply to everyday life, in addition to then workbooks on top of that help people actually learn step-by-step systematically through a curriculum type of format how to then apply the skills in other areas as well.
And they still have to be cleared?
Yeah, everything has to be cleared. Everything that gets published has to be cleared by the CIA's Publication Review Committee. It's not just a me thing either. Every former officer out there knows that challenge.
Yes, definitely. Now, this one is for the workplace. What's the next one coming up?
I'm torn between whether the next one should be about networking or whether the next one should be about social mechanics. Social mechanics are specifically those how you control a social interaction. The words that you choose, the perspective that you gain from thinking through the other person's point of view. In many ways, what Jackie was saying about gaining the knowledge that comes from researching points in history. Oftentimes, if you're trying to drive a specific outcome in a social interaction, you have to look at the world not just through that person's eyes in the moment, but consider all of the biases and the experiences that person has had in their history coming to that moment.
Now, what can you give us some examples of how, say, somebody is working in a company, how can they sort of work their way through getting ahead.
Yeah, what absolutely. Now, one of the easiest things that we can do is really just start to think about our role through the eyes of our boss, which nobody really wants to do. Most people want to sit around and complain about their boss.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But if you stop
That's why I never wanted a boss.
Yeah. If you stop for a moment and you think about what your boss is trying to achieve, and not just what they're trying to achieve in terms of being your boss, but what they're trying to achieve in terms of their career, in terms of their work-life balance, in terms of their family, right? Most bosses are just like you. They're just an employee under an organization trying to make their way up the chain, right? And there's certain things they need to achieve to get there. If you can be a force multiplier to them, if you can put yourself in a position where you're helping your boss achieve what your boss wants to achieve, then you're going to be the one that goes along with the boss right on up that ladder, right? But most of us don't think that way. Most of us think that our boss is an idiot, or our boss doesn't understand, or our boss isn't paying attention. And very few of us are taking the time to reflect and say, hey, you know what? I'm trying to be home at 4:30 so that I can make dinner for my kids. I'm trying to, you know, get in the office at 8 o'clock, but it's always hard because of school, you know, rush hour traffic. Your boss is going through the same problems. And if you can put yourself in his or her shoes and plan your work projects, plan your conversations, plan your emails in such a way that it helps them achieve whatever they're trying to achieve, you will quickly find that you become an indispensable resource to that boss. And now they're making the decision to promote you. They're making the decision to give you a raise. They're making the decision that anywhere they go, they need you with them. And that's indirect influence.
Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. I like it. It's so funny. I'm just thinking, I've never really worked well with bosses. I don't know why. I can't imagine. But I'm just trying to think in relationship to your book. I should have read this before. Now, Jackie, when you're now I know that one of the things that you're working now, that you were a school teacher, and of course, as you were telling me, things have changed in the world of education.
Yes, not for the better. I'm sorry to say
because we want to have more informed people, which is what Andy wants, is to inform people in certain areas and keep secrets in other areas. But did you find it difficult when you were a teacher working through the system?
Oh, yes. Yes. Especially when they started to push the curriculum down. I was a kindergarten teacher for most of my career, and then I transferred to middle school reading. But my philosophy was always that of a developmentalist. I believe children develop at a certain rate, and you have to tailor their learning to fit where they are. Unfortunately, that has really been thrown out the window with all the testing and the Common Core standards and all of this other, you know, this other stuff that's been pushed on to teachers. And what I've noticed is that now when I look at kindergarten curriculum, it's actually first grade curriculum that's been pushed down into the kindergarten. But kindergartners are still 5 and 6 year olds, and developmentally that's where they are. And what I saw as this was being done, because it started toward the end of the time that I was teaching kindergarten, the more they pushed the curriculum down into the lower grade, the higher the remediation rate became. So there was like almost a direct correlation between the rise in the need for remedial services for children and pushing the curriculum down into grades where it really wasn't developmentally appropriate. And now we have, you know, you have a child who's probably an average student and would be fine if the curriculum was age appropriate, who is now frustrated and turned off to school and has to go into basic skills improvement programs and needs tutoring and remediation. And it's really not because of the child. It's because the child was not developmentally ready to do what the curriculum requires. And you get little boys being given Ritalin because they can't pay attention and sit still. And all of this stuff flows from that. And it's just,
well, I'm thinking, I was just listening to that, I was thinking, well, you know, maybe we should teach children your 4 C's.
What was
consideration. It's consideration, collaboration, right? Which is so important that they learn. Consistency, So those are your four C's: consideration, collaboration, consistency and control.
Correct.
So
it's fascinating to me listening to Jackie kind of play out what's happening on the front end of the learning curve, because what happens in intelligence, what espionage is all about, is it's all about information superiority. That's the goal. No matter, I know Hollywood makes it look like we're driving cars and wearing bespoke suits and we're surrounded by beautiful people and beautiful places, but we're really, that's not the root of it. The root is about a race for information. And if children, if at our youngest roots, we're struggling to develop the tools that we need to process and synthesize and come to a conclusion based on certain information, then it's not a surprise to me at all when I look and I see where intelligence is going and where I see some of the headlines about intelligence are now, where information is not necessarily factual because the consumer doesn't know how to discern fact from something that isn't factual. We were joking earlier about the news. One of the questions that I get very often from folks when I'm speaking, when I'm visiting, when I'm hosting a training event, people all want to know, what is the news source that you trust? Where do you go for your information? And I tell them, I don't trust any news source at all. I don't trust any news source to be factual. I trust every news source to have its own agenda, its own slant. And when you think about Boy Scouts, and I'm certain that when you were researching how they navigated back in the days of the Revolutionary War, what Boy Scouts and what field officers and military field deployed units, what we all learned to do is triangulate our location, cast intentional slants on a compass in different directions, and then triangulate a specific location from those misdirections, right? So we're casting azimuth, casting a direction in a wrong direction intentionally to find the accurate triangle of where we are. That's the same thing I recommend with news. Follow multiple slanted news sources and then find the place where they all intersect. That's the truth.
That's true. Aha! See? I knew I liked him, even if he's not dressed as Benjamin Franklin. I knew it. I just knew it. Wow. And as a matter of fact, in your book, you have the compass.
Yes. Yes,
what, ma'am. What are the points of the compass that you refer to?
In my book, in this file, this series, I refer to a compass and I use the four C's to define the four points of a compass, a north, south, east, and west point, right? And they align to these four C's, your consistency, collaboration, consideration, and control. And these are the four tenets that I say will help anybody develop the career that they want out of the career that they have discovered, or the career that they're in. And the real basic walkthrough there is you consider another person's perspective, just like we talked about with the boss. You consider their perspective. You collaborate with them or with people around them to help them succeed. You are consistent in that consideration and consistent in that collaboration, because how many of us have failed because we're not consistent? And how many chances do you get to be consistent before somebody just rules you as unreliable, right? So really, the fastest way to become someone's go-to person is to be a consistent person. And once you've considered, collaborated, and been consistent, you are the one in control. And that's how it works in the real world. That's how international events are shaped and changed by intelligence, because we apply those four concepts in every operation, in every engagement, in every relationship, because the ultimate person that we want to have in control is us.
Well, I think, Jack, don't you think that he should now write a children's book, a book for five-year-olds, and to teach them these four C's and get it sort of ingrained, and boy, they would have a much better time in school.
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't it be wonderful? Really, because this is part of the problem of in schools, of education, when you have a whole bunch of people and they all are sort of not on the same game plan. And when you get them to think about this, actually, it's real. I can see a children's book here where you really can put together this idea of children, if you're considerate, and if you think about what your teacher's going through, she has struggled. She's gotten herself up early in the morning.
Oh,
and
yes.
She is like at the end of her line by the time she gets here. She can't drink coffee in the classroom.
So I have a five-year-old son. And it's funny you make the joke. And I have a five-year-old son. His name is Sina. I don't know if you're listening, Sina. If you are listening, Sina, I love you very much. But my son has this fantastic habit of watching my wife and I go through our day, And when we reach some kind of a breaking point, and if you're a parent, you know what I'm talking about, that there's always multiple breaking points in a day. He has this habit of coming up to us and telling us that he loves us and that he thanks us for working so hard to give him a good life. And he'll give us a hug or he'll give us a kiss. And then, you know, 5 minutes later, he doesn't remember any of that. But in that moment, we would do anything for him. It's all worth it in that moment. And it gets us through to the next, you know, the bridge to the next meltdown kind of thing.
Well, I have the right thing. You're training. He's training the next CIA agent of the future. Of course, if we still have people of the future, because maybe everything will. I don't think everything will be taken by robots. There is nothing like human intelligence. You really, really. I don't care. You can have all the listening devices, and you can listen all day long to and read people say until you actually know people. You don't learn anything.
Absolutely.
Isn't that true?
That's absolutely true. People make machines.
That's right.
You've got to understand the people first.
Exactly. That's so sweet. But I think that really that's something that would change people's lives.
I'm hoping to change people's lives now, right? It's never too late to learn. There's a concept out there called neuroplasticity, that your mind never actually stagnates. It's just at different levels of flexibility. And if we, even now, no matter what our age might be, if we can allow ourselves to embrace the fact that our mind can adapt to something new, and then we direct what it adapts to. We can direct our minds to adapt to hate speech and anger and fear and frustration, or we can adapt our minds to take on challenges like new perspectives and new skills and being patient and listening instead of talking. These are all things we can train ourselves to do. You don't have to be 5 to learn how to give somebody a hug and say thank you for working so hard to give me a good life.
Do you think we should send him to Washington, D.C., and should do a Toastmaster?
I came back from D.C.
For Congress there. You could take them all together and teach them these 4 C's and turn them all around. That's what we might need, because we really, well, sometimes you feel like I like your attitude. Ignore the news, and actually read a good book. And I think that it's so funny. I had heard about you from people say, well, you know, there's this guy, he's really a great speaker, and you have to have him on. And I was told he's got a 20-page book, and I said, "Oh, well, yeah."
Who has a 20-page book?
And then I got it, and I said, "Oh, wow! He has more to teach people than people with 1,000-page books." And so it's ridiculously reasonable. people can get it. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble too,
and where, Amazon, iTunes, absolutely,
wherever, yeah. and it's 99 cents.
I have it as 99 cents. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm just trying to get the knowledge out. That's really one of the things that you learn in intelligence and in espionage, is that if you control knowledge, then you control the masses. So one of the things that I want to be very careful about doing is never controlling my own knowledge. I want to let it spread, because it's not mine. It was never mine. It's just fact. It's the truth that many of us are looking for. And I challenge people to pick up anything that I write, anything that I say, and do exactly what I'm telling them to do with it. Go test it. Go vet it. Go use it. Go find somebody who disagrees or criticizes with me and follow their path and see what they say. And let the results stand for themselves.
Well, I think, I was so impressed with it. I was thinking, this is so inspirational. And I'm not sure, you know, people, you're out there, and I mean, there's so many uses for the information that's in your book. It can be even used in family situations, in school situations, and certainly in business situations, this knowledge of these 4 C's. It's really sort of common sense, so we can add that too. Now, Jackie, what's up next for you? What are you doing now?
Well, right now, I'm working on a homeschool initiative that my publisher has put into motion. We're going to try to create a really good comprehensive homeschool program for reading language arts K-12. And so I've got my teacher hat back on. It's not quite as much fun as writing a novel, but I think the purpose is more important at this point. I really want to see homeschool parents be able to, regardless of their education level, if they've made that commitment, be able to give their child lessons that are teacher quality lessons. And I'm designing lesson plans that will enable them to do that. And I guess in the long run, it kind of has more of an impact on the direction that kids will take than the novels do.
Well, I highly recommend that you read Andy's book, mm-hmm. and Everyday Espionage. And this one is winning in the workplace, but you can take his ideas and translate them into winning in homeschooling, because mm-hmm. I was a homeschool mom, and it was lots of fun. I mean, I sort of had to make my own way, but when I'm looking at this now, I'm thinking that these are actually the concepts that I taught my boys, because they had one thing about homeschooling, your kids have to be nice. Mm-hmm. You cannot live with them and spend the entire day with them unless they are considerate, unless they actually do think about what I was doing and take that into the whole factor of the whole day. And I was considerate to them, thinking of what they did, because one of the wonderful things about homeschooling, we didn't have to start until 9 o'clock in the morning. And I really, these kids who are taken off and put on buses at 6:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. I think it's tragic. I don't think kids are really thinking well at 6:30.
I'm an adult. I don't think well before 8 a.m.
So, and the kids have to do it without coffee. So when I hear the stories of these kids who are on buses already at 7 o'clock, and I think it's terrible. But we started at a reasonable time, 9 o'clock, unless we were going to the park and we'd head off early and for our adventures. But you could put these principles into homeschooling, don't you think?
Yeah, it's funny, because we are a homeschool family as well.
Oh.
Yeah, we're on a 3-year national speaking tour. We just kicked off on December 9th. We've only left the state of Florida for a short break to celebrate the new year, but our first state is obviously Florida, and we've had a chance to speak at USF, and mm-hmm. I just spoke the other day at Eckerd College. I'm looking at opportunities to speak right now next week in Gainesville. But we are road schooling our children on this tour.
Because we should mention your wife was also
Correct.
In the CIA, so
right.
It's a joint effort here.
Right, right. And you know, I do most of the driving on the speaking and booking end. My wife absolutely takes the lead on working with the kids. And the first way that we started homeschooling was deliberately by unschooling, mm-hmm. by breaking all of the school habits that our children had been trained in order to survive among 30 other students, right? All of the standing in lines and all of the wait your turns and all of the, you know, snack time is at 9:30, and if you don't eat in 15 minutes, you don't get your snack mm-hmm. kind of thing. We had to break all of that before we could even encourage our child, our son, to find his voice to say when he's hungry, when he's tired, whatever it might be. And you're 100% right. My family, I have an 18-month-old daughter named Alai, and I have a 5-year-old son named Sina. They're not awake until 7:45, 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And their sweetest parts of the day are from like 10 p.m. or 10 a.m. till like 2 p.m. And when we put our kids in school, we miss the best parts of their days. And then we get them back fried and frustrated at the end of the day. And it's a heartbreaking thing.
I think it's, I really do think it's terrible. I think it's almost abusive. When I've met children, well, many of my son's friends would be so sad, because they just were always miserable in the mornings. And my boys were so happy, because they were always looking, they would say, you know, what park are we going to? And one of the things I love to do was, I love to take our whole school process to interesting places. We might sit in the lobby of a hotel, or we might sit in a restaurant, or, you know, and I would go to different places, and we just enjoyed it so much. And they miss that in school. And so I'm glad to hear that you're homeschooling. It's fun. And every minute, I could relive it over and over. Every minute that I spent homeschooling was an absolute joy. So I think it's fantastic. Well, you know, it's really been great to have you in here. And Jackie, I want to thank you so much. How can people contact you or find out more about you? Do you have a website or anything?
Yes, I have a website. It's JackieMinitti.com. And the books are there. You can order the books from the website. They're also on Amazon, you know, iTunes, same places.
And thank you very much for coming in today. And the new book is One Small Spark. And the previous book, Jacqueline, which I love because my father was in World War II in the same basic area as your father. And so it always touches my heart when I think of that book. And Andrew Bustamante, where can they contact you? Or do you want people to contact you? Or you don't want people to contact you?
I'll come to you. No, it's easy to find me. We have been very fortunate to take over Google with Everyday Espionage. So if you Google search Everyday Espionage or you search Everyday Espionage on any platform, we are the first two pages on Google. You'll find your way to my personal website, andrewbustamante.org. You'll find your way to the Everyday Espionage website, everydayespionage.com. I have a podcast out. I have the books out. I'm on a national speaking tour. So if you hear this broadcast and you want to bring this live to any of your organizations, your students, your business, reach out to us through the website and we'll be there.
Well, I think major businesses would just benefit so much from bringing you in to talk to their employees. And boy, the employees will have a whole new attitude, and things might start working better because it really is important that we show consideration. So I'm glad that the first C there is consideration. So I think you've done a great job, and I will have you back. Maybe I'll have you back on somebody else's birthday, and you'll come dressed up. But I think you're fantastic, and I'm sure that this will be a lot of fun. This is another adventure in your life.
Absolutely.
That's a wonderful thing about being a spy. You live so many lives, and you never know where you will end up, right?
Very true.
Absolutely. Well, and Jackie, again, thank you so much. And I want to remind everyone that next week, Bill Larson, our legal eagle, is going to be here, and he's going to be talking about intellectual property. And there have been some changes that came this year in 2019 that you will be very interested in hearing about. And go to my webpage, radio-joy on paper. On the front page there, I have a form. If you have a question for Bill, just fill it in and Bill will answer your questions. Because remember, your intellectual property is your asset. It's valuable and you need to protect it. So make sure that you do that. And meanwhile, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in audible book. Or if you're very lucky, one day to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a film or streaming video or maybe on the Hallmark Channel, like Carol J. Perry's books have to be, because I am really crazy about these books and she has a new one out and she'll be here in February. Okay, and say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Okay, bye-bye. Have a great weekend.